The very first episode of From Grain to Glass. I'm your co-host, Kevin Webb. Beside me, the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour, Mr. Rob Whittington.
Hello, everybody.
And of course, we always have to have the most lovable, sexist intern we know, Mr. Nick Chan.
How's it going?
So guys, really quite simple what this podcast is all about. We love beer. Rob loves beer. It's bread and butter. We want a podcast that talks about beer, enjoys beer, explains beer. We want to have a situation where if you love beer, but you go to that restaurant or go to that brewery, you sit down, you look at the menu, you don't go, what the fuck are they saying? Because I think that happens a lot, right?
Yeah.
You sit down, you look at the menu, you go, well, that name's kind of funny. I guess I'll get that. And then you drink it and it tastes like horse piss.
Happens to me all the time.
Does it?
Yep.
Expensive horse piss.
Expensive horse piss that you don't want to drink, yeah. Right? So we don't want that to happen with anybody else. So we are going to have those conversations. We're going to talk about different kinds of beer. We're talking about the breweries. And we're just going to have a good time. So
going to drink some beer.
We're going to drink some beer. So if you don't enjoy the very beginning of this podcast, just fast forward to the end. We will all be drunk and it'll be a lot more entertaining. Yeah. So I guess we had talked about it. The very first thing we wanted to talk about, though, was kind of the primary colors, and I'm using quotation marks right now for you at home, the primary colors of beer, like, right. What are the different, what's the basis of all the different beers? So if we learn the basis, then we can kind of splinter out and understand what the different beers are, and that might make it a little bit easier, for example, when we sit down at that menu and look at the different types of beer.
Yeah, so the primary colors of beer, if you're really going to consider, there's only four elements in beer basically anyway, and that's water, yeast, barley, and hops, or grain and hops if you sometimes use other things with barley. But if you know everybody knows what water is, obviously it's the medium we're making it in. But if you're talking about what adds to the flavor and what turns beer into what it is, so that you can have quality difference in who makes it. So you go to a restaurant, you try and pick out something you like. If you know these primary colors, you'll be a lot more successful in getting something you want.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to start with, the big three of being yeast, hops, and grain. So I think a lot of people don't really understand that it's not just hops. A lot of times, currently, it's very trendy to drink IPAs, and people think that hops is the only thing that contributes the flavor to it, and they get caught up in writing tasting notes and little booklets and stuff like that, and it's just not all about that. You can have really great tasting beer that is focused on grain or is focused on the elements that yeast can put in. They are very different, so if you look at certain beer styles after you listen to a conversation like this, you'll be able to think, oh yeah, okay, I know that comes from Belgium. So that's going to be more of a yeast profile driven, beer, and
mm-hmm.
Or it's German, so they have a very clean flavor. They depend on the grain to really, come through. They don't focus so much on the different yeast profiles. They just want to have as clean a possible flavor and as few off flavors. And then hops, like I said, very popular right now to have IPAs. But hops themselves they work together in different capacities. They work alone sometimes, if you go to a homebrew store, there's only, one where we live, but
right.
If you go to a homebrew store, you're going to see, 30 different varieties of hops. It's the same experience as sitting down at a bar and thinking, wow, there's 30 beers, but I don't know what anything is, so I'll get a Coors Light.
Right.
You know, so you end up going to the homebrew store and you end up asking the guy, oh, hey, what's a good hop? And as soon as they hear that, they think, oh, well, if you don't know anything, I'll give you something safe.
Right.
And then you end up with something you don't like. So, yeah, as far as primary colors, I think the next part of this is just to get to it. I've got a couple of beers.
The primary colors again were?
Yeast, grain, and hops.
Yeast, grain, and hops.
Yeah. And if I was going to have a simple explanation why, it's yeast would produce what we call esters, which are flavors that are similar to fruits and spices that are predominant in certain styles of beer. Mm-hmm. We'll kind of talk about, you know, if you look and you see a certain style, you're going to know that that's driven by those yeast esters. Grain, the flavor you always think about grain, is malt. So if you think about like toasted biscuit bread kind of flavors, mm-hmm. That's kind of what you're gonna come up with. And then hops is really where you get into the vegetal portion of it. You know, they are a plant. A certain amount of it is gonna be, it's gonna soak in there. The essential oils from the plant, the alpha and beta acids that are in there are gonna contribute not just bitterness, but then, you know, also different flavors like tropical, pine, resin, stone fruit. You know, you can have all different kinds of. So when you start thinking about mixing all those different flavors together,
right,
from yeast, grain, and hops, then you get something that's, you know, more than the sum of its parts.
So I guess a question for me though is that yeast, grain, and hops, that's the building blocks for beer, but is it, and this is going to be probably a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyways, is every beer going to have all three ingredients, or are they going to have
you are mix? But this is a good starting point, right? So like if I let me get the first one.
Sure.
The one that I brewed today, this is an amber, but it's a little, so an amber, it's a little heavier than an amber. It's maybe somewhere between an amber and a brown ale. But so what this would be, an amber would be something that had like a mild brown color, had pretty good clarity, wasn't really driven by grain, but certainly only uses enough hop balance to sort of enough hops to balance rather than stand out. Here, I'm just going to get like a little of each one because we don't need to drink 10 beers apiece today while we're here.
So says who?
This is probably too cold a glass, but I'm doing this so that you can taste this particular grain character that's in it. And it's just a good starting point for seeing that, like you were saying, it's like, well, do they all use, same amounts or different amounts? So this would be an incredibly small amount, and we have all different means of measuring how much we're using.
Incredibly small amount
of hops as compared to grain. So this would be like, if you were going to say how many gallons of beer I prepared 4 gallons of beer, but I only used half an ounce of hops total,
mm-hmm.
for this beer. It's not a lot. And then I use about 10 pounds of grain, right? So then there's all different kinds of, let's see how this is. Maybe a little too cold, but taste of grain in it. I probably shouldn't have frozen glasses, but I wanted to, that, like when you get it colder, I was thinking that a lot of times it kills off some of those like alcohol flavors and stuff so that you could really taste that kind of grain element that was in it. I wanted to see if you could pick that out. You get what I'm talking about?
I smell the grain.
You smell it more than you taste it. Yeah,
I taste it too.
I probably, if I did that in warmer glasses, it'd probably be better. I just figured we were going to be drinking them for, you know, a while, so we'd start small.
Right. It'd be warmed up by the third or fourth beer.
Yeah.
Are we going to be doing any keg stands on
that? Not on that. No, I don't. Yeah, right. We could turn it upside down, I guess, or crank the pressure way up. So if you start with a beer like this, so this would be what I was talking earlier about. You can get quite a bit out of the grain. You don't have to have a whole lot of hops. You can still have a really tasty beer. So this isn't expensive to brew, and it uses a very, you would go to a homebrew store, you would pick out a grain bill, right? So for something like a stout, you'd have grains in there that were absolutely burnt to a crisp, right? To provide that black color and that serious, like, coffee, chocolate, those roasted flavors that go into it. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you'd have ones that were barely toasted at all. Things like two-row, or maybe, you know, there's all, every country has a different base malt.
Let me ask a question that's coming up. So, you know, this is a darker beer. So this is what you said, between like amber or brown ale?
Yeah, between an amber and a brown
ale. So amber, brown ale, stout, they're all the darker types of beer, right? Are they all kind of more grain-based?
They are. They are. They're,
so
it, those, so so that would be definitely the darker a beer is, the longer the grains in them have been roasted. You're not necessarily going to be able to say this has more grain or less grain, but a good way to look at that is the alcohol percentage. So if your this beer is about 6%, right? So if you are looking at you know, you're looking at a menu and there's a chocolate porter on there and it's 8%. Okay, well, you know, darker grains, more grains used, more pounds of grains used per, you know, gallon of water, quart of water, however you want to look at it. And you would easily be able to think, okay, that's something that's going to have a, like a really serious malt flavor. If you look at a black IPA, so that's just something that uses a little bit of roasted malt for that color. It might be only 5 or 6% alcohol. It doesn't use as much grain. But then you'll look at the hop bitterness, the IBU, and you'll be able to get, you know, in that range and decide how, you know, whether or not you would like to drink that.
Well, okay, another dumb question.
No, it's fine. Because I forget. I just speak in those, you
no,
know, anagrams
I
don't even think of.
So the, what am I looking, the word I'm looking for, the alcohol by volume, right?
Yeah.
So if we look at that, you said like this one is 6%.
Mm-hmm.
What's we were talking about like as far as grain is concerned, is there a certain ingredient when you put it in the beer that raises that up?
Sure. So if you think in terms of, again, of like the lighter ones or the darker ones, the lightest possible grains that we would call base malts.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the ones that are really going to provide the alcohol, but not a lot of flavor or color or depth to the beer itself. So then after that, you would have what you would call like adjuncts, which are, you know, oats and corn and things. They all do different things within beer. And then you would have other roasted malts that you would use. And I mean, there's, you know.
So what you're saying is if it tastes really good, you're probably not going to get drunk off of it.
Yeah, right. If it tastes good, it's because it's been made well. It's not
right.
Just the magic equation of saying, oh, well, I'll put 2 pounds of this and 3 pounds of that, and that's what Stone does, so, you
right.
know, or
right.
this brewery does, so it's going to be excellent beer. It's not at all. A lot of it depends on your setup and how much care you put into, you know, your sanitation. And but if we're going to have the conversation of like you're sitting at a bar
right.
and you want to think of something that's going to taste good, if you know what you like and you like something that's middle of the road and you want something that's like an amber, that's great. But
mm-hmm.
then a Vienna lager would be in that same range, you know. So you can look at, you could even say, you know, like a better question would be, if you sat down and you didn't know what something was, even if you just asked, what color is it? And somebody said, it's kind of a light, you know, then you automatically know you're
right.
not dealing with a lot of dark grains, heavy flavor, right? You're dealing with a much cleaner, milder kind of a flavor, maybe with a little bit of malt in it. I mean, you know a lot just by asking what color it is, rather than having a conversation of, what's this beer like? And they'll be like, well, it's from here. It's from this brewery, which doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Or it's this IBU, and you don't know what IBU stands for. And then you think, okay, great. Well, I guess I'll just get that.
What's IBU stand for?
It's the bitterness units. You can just think of it in bitterness
okay.
units. So, like,
international bitterness units.
There you go. So 45 would be where an IPA starts.
Okay.
And that would be a pretty mild one. By the time you get to, like, you know, 65, 70, you're talking, like, things like, like Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA,
right.
or, I mean, you know, pick, or Elysian, you drink, that's a popular one around here. Elysian, those ring out
around
90. Those are, you know, pretty serious on the bitters.
So if they have a, so, okay, then in that regard, is so that's mostly, like, really hoppy types of beer.
Sure.
Would a stout have that same, so would a stout even have IBU associated
sure.
with it?
Sure, absolutely.
But it would, but it would be probably less?
It would be. They
okay.
Stouts are going to be, they're going to have a range, but it's not uncommon to see that 45 IBU attached to a stout. Even Guinness is right around 40 IBU, I think, you know. So, but you're still, nope.
Correction. IBU stands for International Bittering Units.
Bittering.
Thank
bitterness.
You.
Thank
That's
you.
That's why he's the best intern around.
Good research.
You guys are welcome.
Thank you, young Nick.
But no, it's not. Bitterness units is an overall indicator of what the flavor of the beer is going to be like, right? If you have a stout that's 45 IBU versus a big Russian Imperial stout that's like 85 or 90 IBU, mm-hmm. they're both got that black color, got that nice tan head on them. You have no idea. So looking at that number is really going to save you, because there's a lot of people that don't want to drink a 10% 90 IBU Russian, you know, stout. They want something that's much more mild, that's, you know, going to come down to, you know, 40, 45 IBU and not be 8%. Maybe, you know, 5.5 or 6% is enough, you know, so.
Like a nice Bud Light.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's, so, yeah, Bud Light, like, you know, 4%, you know, even the color
two
on
Bud
it, 12 IBU, two Bud Lights, there you go. Yeah, you save a few bucks at least.
Nick's really, really trying to get that Bud Light sponsor for the podcast.
Yeah, right. So this would be, this amber that we're drinking would be, there's also a color, like you could, color's easy because you could just ask if people can always, oh, it's kind of light brown, it's kind of dark brown. There is a color varying, there's a scale called SRM. Don't ask me what SRM stands for, I can't remember, I'll have to look that up. So this would be, if you were going to talk about what this beer was, you would say that this was a 6% alcohol by volume.
Mm-hmm.
This is about 20 bittering units, and then this is about SRM's about 20, IBU's about 20, it's about the same right there.
So, okay, so I'm going to backtrack for a second. Go ahead. What's
SRM stands for Standard Reference Method.
Okay, so that, and it just means color, that's why I couldn't.
Okay.
Remember, yeah.
So,
there's a couple of different color scales.
So, you and I are both old men.
Yes.
Right? Young Nick here.
I'm a young
Correct.
Boy.
He's a very young individual, young boy. He's just now getting into drinking beer. He's found legal. He's had a couple years. But
right.
I mean, if you look at him, you wouldn't tell.
Right.
But if he's brand new, goes to the first brewery, sits down, do you think the best way to figure out what beers are for you is just to sit down, maybe do a flight and do a taste test and go, okay, well, this one right here is a look. I like this one that's darker. The darker beers are kind of my what I like, so I'm gonna start going in that vein. Or do you think there'd be a better way to kind of?
I'm gonna assume you're in a place that offers a variety of craft beer already. Is what we're talking about, right? We're talking about like the people that work there are going to know. So,
I would hope,
but I think that it's interesting when you talk about this kind of like asking what you're gonna do, because their knowledge is usually. If you go to a place like that and you ask somebody, can I just get a flight of beers? And they say, what do you like? Right? It's usually the first question they have. Well, kind of the whole reason I'm getting a flight is I don't know what I like. I kind of want to see what you got, you know? So yeah, I would probably grab, say a flight is 4, you know, I would probably grab something in the SRM of like, you know, maybe like go like 10, 20, 50, 80, something like that, to where you knew you were going to get a very light straw yellow, a very mild light brown, a darker, heavier brown, something like a porter or brown ale, something in that race, and then a stout. Like, if you had those 4 colors in front of you, then you would definitely get a real good cross-section of what was going on within that bar, right?
Right.
Now, that said, I think that the last thing when you're learning about beer is to think about breweries or regions. It really is more about what's in the glass, what's coming out of the tap, like, people get kind of hung up on thinking, oh, this is Lagunitas, so it's going to be good. They make plenty of beer I don't like.
Right.
They make plenty of beer that's awesome. So I think not asking, okay, well, pick me 4 from the good breweries, or pick me 4 from, you know, great regions for beer. I don't think that's the
right
way.
I think that's,
I think color is probably an excellent way.
There's several breweries. We're located in Louisville, Kentucky, and there's several pretty decent breweries here. And I from firsthand experience, there's several... of one in particular that I'm thinking about now that I absolutely love, and there's a few that this
don't do it for
you.
Yeah.
But if I was brand new, and I came in from out of town, I sat down and I was like, oh, well,
if you went to some place in town and said, give me the 4 things that you do here that are your favorites, you might get 4 sours.
Right.
You have no idea
what they want.
Right. So, yeah, I think color is definitely a better way of doing it, but I think also. A lot of times when you ask and you say, oh, give me what's good, and they give you the 4, or you say, give me 4 that are a different color, you know, kind of a gradient.
Right.
Or you would say, give them to me based on IBU, on hops. You know, you want to see from mild all the way up. That's another good way of doing
it. So I guess the question for me, too, is you said that IBU, when you say IBU, I'm thinking, you know,
bittering,
right? I'm thinking, like, when I drink an IPA, that for, when you drink it, you can taste that kind of like, there's a little bit of a kick to it. I'm thinking of that as the bitterness.
Yes.
Okay, so, but if you had said before that, like, an IBU for one of the IPAs might be at a 50, but a stout might be the same way. Well, I don't taste that bitterness in stout, though. You know what I mean? That's, I guess, the confusing part.
So let's use this for comparison. So let's say, typically, porters are not hopped as aggressively as stouts are, typically. Okay, they can be, but it's kind of rare. Typically, porter, slightly more brown than black, and stout more, you know, real. Typically, alcohol is going to be higher in the stouts. Mm-hmm. And typically, the bitterness is going to be lower in the porter and a little higher in the stout, okay? Because the porter wants to focus on that malt flavor. So you're saying, like, if the IBU is the same in the stouts, you know, how do you not taste it? Imagine that if you're getting those darker grains, they've mm-hmm. been charred in ovens, like, forever, mm-hmm. right? You're going to pick up, like, roasted coffee, chocolate, those flavors with whatever hops you put against are going to completely cancel each other. You just do not be, you can't pick up on any nuance with all
it's,
those
it's
different
kind of get like getting a hamburger and then dousing it with ketchup. You're going to taste the ketchup.
Say ketchup, right. In the stout, even if, say, it's, you know, aggressively hopped, what you're going to get is that it's more bitter. You're not necessarily going to pick up on those hop flavors. So a lot of times, and I don't build a lot of stouts, so somebody else could, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but my experience has been, you've got so much of this roasted chocolate, coffee, you know, kind of flavors right. going on that you the hop bitterness is really there to provide balance in the beer. Okay. And I don't mean cover flavors, I just mean so that you're drinking a stout, you're not drinking a glass that tastes like chocolate and coffee. Like, those are nice in stouts, but there's something else to a stout quality than just having those sort of basic flavors that you identify with. You know, Guinness is I think, is still, for a commercially made beer that's made for hundreds of years, is a perfectly good example of that. Like, you get notes of chocolate and coffee and roasted, but it's not the entire profile. You know, they do a lot with their hop schedule in order to make it taste like a finished beer, is where I'm going.
Okay. Well, okay, so we've kind of jumped around a little bit, but there's a couple things that I wanted to touch on. So, we have a stout, which would be on the very far end of what was the SRM,
mm-hmm.
which the way you think about that is just the color.
Correct.
Right? So you have a stout, and then you have, going the other way, you're going an amber probably.
Sure.
And then what would you think would be after that, going to the lighter side?
To the lighter side would be like, you know, like a premium American lager or a golden or a pale or a triple or something like that.
Like lagers?
Yeah. No. Well, they could be lagers or ales, but I mean just in terms of the color themselves.
Okay.
Like if you said, you know, just bring me four that are kind of different, but I like them really, really light. I like that kind of straw yellow, kind of golden
right.
you know, color. Because people do you do associate that with a lighter, more like refreshing, cleaner flavor.
Right.
So, you know, you'll get a Pilsner. You'll get, you know, maybe like a Bohemian, something like, you know, Stella or Heineken, you know, kind of
right.
like, I'm not like a true Bohemian, but like, you'll get a golden, you'll get a cream ale, and there's just a ton of things that exist in that color range.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still pick out a lot of different nuances because you didn't use a lot of darker malts for those flavors. Those are going to rely more on maybe the yeast profile and maybe the hop, you know, profile.
Mm-hmm.
But again, primary colors, right? You're not putting a lot of grain into that one, and you're going to balance between the yeast profile and the hops instead of maybe the grain in the hops where you would in a really, really powerful stout. And a stout, you know, you don't have to worry about the yeast so much, you know.
Is there anything beyond a stout as far as...
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, maybe not in terms of color, you know, by the time you get up to using the kinds of grains that they use in those, there's another scale for those too. I'm not going to go into it, but they're so dark, there's literally nothing darker, right?
Right.
But in terms of alcohol content and in terms of malt flavor, some of the Scottish beers, you know, wee heavies and stuff like that to get up there, man, they are...
Those are thick, like,
they are
oil.
Exactly, man. They are super powerful, and some people love them, you know? The Germans have Doppelbock, you know? They've got Eisenbock that they partially freeze and pull the ice out of to where they, you know, elevate the malt flavor and the alcohol percentage in. So yeah, you can get a lot heavier than a stout in terms of malt flavor. But again, if you're doing that kind of a beer, that's malt driven. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's your primary color in that equation. And you'll see the high alcohol by volume, comparably lower IBU, but then there's really no description for malt. They don't have like a scale that you would put malt flavor on. You just kind of have to know what it is, or you'll rely on somebody's description.
Would you say that the beers that are on the other, the darker beers, they're always the higher alcohol by volume? Would that be a true statement?
That's pretty usual, and anything, and it's, again, we'll have the intern check for us here, but my understanding is that, generally speaking, anything above 8% is considered high gravity. So a lot of times you'll hear that term, high gravity, associated. This is a high gravity stout. This is a high gravity Belgian, like a triple would be a high. But it doesn't necessarily mean the color is going to be super dark.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, that's a pretty good rule. If you sat down and looked and saw, give me something that's dark and you know, I kind of like it to be, you know, grain, you know, malt driven or
right.
something like that, then yeah, then you're going to end up with something that's 8 or 9%.
Our
research is in.
Definition. High gravity beer. Brewing high gravity beer involves more ingredients, longer fermentation time, and higher risk for the brewer.
Yeah, yeah, right.
The huge rewards for the beer drinker.
Oh, but it doesn't have the actual...
The percentage.
Yeah, it's probably around... I think it's around 8% AB alcohol by volume is generally speaking where people start talking about high gravity.
So,
where they don't sell it in Utah.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
So if somebody sat down and looked at the menu and they were like, oh, well, that has a very high alcohol by volume.
Yep.
Then more likely not, that one coming back to them is going to be a darker,
generally speaking,
stout.
Yes. Generally speaking,
beer.
Yes. Yeah. And then as there are exceptions to every rule.
Right.
But generally speaking, yeah, that's a very good way of thinking about.
Okay.
It's dark. It's got a high alcohol content. You're talking about a malt-driven beer.
But it's also one of those beers when you're drinking it. Usually, now, for me, when I think of a stout, I'm thinking thick. I'm thinking
right, but not necessarily. You know, yeah. I mean, but yeah, right. Okay, you know, I get where you're going. Thick, filling. But again, when we said earlier about like we were talking about grains, that there's a lot of things you can put in it. You can put oats in there that don't contribute a lot in terms of alcohol, but they'll give you a really heavy mouthfeel. Or
right.
you can put rye in there and it'll give you like a almost like a slick, oily kind of, you know, and it's, some people really, really like that. But generally speaking, if you're looking to sit down at a bar and figure out what you want and you've looked at some dark beers before, you see a bunch that you don't know, and you see one in there that's like, okay, well, I've had beers before, they're 8 or 9% and they're, you know, this color. Yeah, probably a fair bet that's the one to go with.
Right.
Right. So that you're not just looking at what brewery it comes from or the lengthy description that's on the chalkboard, you know.
So you're looking at, for you at least, you've been around, you know, beer for a very long time, if you walk into, say, a local beer store or a brewery, you're looking at the... alcohol by volume, you're looking at the IBU, you're looking at the color.
Correct.
Those are kind of the three things.
Yep.
You're not, because I think a lot of times, and you already hit on this before, but a lot of times people will walk into a brewery and if they know of the brewery in question, they're like, oh, I'll get that. Well, that can be a crapshoot. But
right.
Those three things was ABV, IBU,
and color.
And SRM.
Yeah,
right?
SRM, right.
So those are the three things that really kind of look at, and if you kind of know what your palate is,
yeah,
those three things will kind of always lead you to a beer that you kind of like.
I would agree with that 100%.
Is there anything else you think that maybe is
like
important?
I think one of the things that is defining is the difference between ale and lager, because that's a big thing. People say, "Well, what's the difference between?" I don't get, you know, lager just means it's been sitting in cold longer or something like that. And I think the first thing that you could do is find out whether or not you like ale or lager better. And that will, I mean, that's half the battle right there. If you figured that out, you'll look at a menu and you'll know, well, I don't really like lagers so much, I prefer the ales. You just wiped out a third of what's on that board, right? That you just know you're not going to like. So, and the difference is that ales are brewed with yeasts that do their work at a certain higher temperature range. I'm just going to be general here and
right.
say it's between 65 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and that lager yeasts are usually between 45 and 55 degrees Fahrenheit. There's a very few exceptions to, can you brew, you know, at an ale temperature with a lager? Yes, you can. They call it steam beer. But nobody drinks it. Like it's just, right? So,
yeah.
Sorry, California Brewer, whoever makes Anchor Steam, it's just not, you know, maybe there's a few people that drink it. It's not, you know, it's just, it's less than, you know, it's got to be less than 1% of what's sold out there. There's no, right?
Right.
So generally speaking, if you can figure out whether you like ales or lagers, you're in a good place. And that would be my next thing that I would do here is I have two from Kona Brewery. One is Longboard and the other is Big Wave. And that's their, Longboard is their lager, Big Wave is
their ale. Okay.
And they're really, really similar in pretty much every profile except for the fact that they use those different yeasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my next.
So through the miracle of technology,
yeah.
the beers have already been poured. And right now we have in our glass.
This is Kona Brewery Big Wave. This is their golden ale. And the reason I'm using this is because this is their ale. They make a lager that has a very, very similar grain profile. It's just that the yeast and the temperature that they do it at is good, is the big difference here, right? Because when you look at it, colorness, bitterness, all that, pretty much the same, right? Mm-hmm. But the actual method that they use to brew these with, make it an ale or a lager, will help you go a long way in figuring out what you want to drink.
Intern?
What do you think of that?
I like it.
Yeah. You can taste a little hot flavor in there, right?
Yes.
But it's not a lot. It's
smooth enough. It's fine for an ale. It's kind of what you would expect out of an ale, right?
It'd be kind of a beer that maybe you would have on a summer day or...
A mower, as they are referred to, what you would have in your hand when you were mowing.
Mowing the grass? Okay.
That's a mower.
No, yeah. As a new, unrefined palate, I really enjoy this.
Unrefined palate. That's a t-shirt idea right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're brewed at...
Could be a crop top.
But they're, you know, they're brewed at ale temperatures. Ales usually brew faster. You can do those in, you know, 7 to 10 days fermentation time. Lager will take you a few weeks. And then a lager is literally going to sit in the cold for, you know, anywhere from probably another couple of weeks to several months. But what you'll notice is that it'll have a much smoother flavor. And you'll probably be able to pick up more in terms of the grain. Because hops, the flavor in them decays over time. So if you're going to lager something, there's probably not much point in putting a whole bunch of hops in there. In fact, a lot of the hop oils get bitter, more like almost like sour, almost like tart, the longer that they kind of sit around, especially if you use a bunch of them.
So amber and lager, it depends on the temperature?
Amber ales and there are amber lagers. And it just depends on knowing that one is going to be done at a lower temperature than the other. And done for a longer period of time.
Longer,
right? So, but if you think about it, grain will always have the same flavor. It's just kind of what it's masked by. So in an ale, the ale yeasts produce all the flavors that they make very, very quickly, right? So that's the advantage. You can have it in 10 days. You can be drinking from grain to glass in 10 days.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
That's the name of the show, all right. But then, if you have a lager, right, you're probably talking, I would say, a minimum of a month for something that's decent, right?
Right.
So if you taste this,
you can smell it through that.
And that smell is one of the things that yeast does. That particular, right. So you just drank two that are pretty much the same in terms of their ingredients. It's just using that yeast and that technique. So if you like this flavor better, you think, oh, you know, if I like lagers better, like when you drink this, you can almost taste something like Pilsner Urquell, right? It has that same kind of...
Like a Heineken.
Yeah, something like that, right?
I don't like Heineken.
A lot of people refer to that flavor as bohemian, that the yeast produces a kind of skunky, you know, like kind of flavor in there. And they refer to it as bohemian, you know, France, northern France, Germany,
so
Holland. I don't know what yeast they're using in this, but that would be a guess of mine. And that whole conversation goes on at another level. But what you would gain from this is that if you like grain flavors and yeast profiles and cleaner tasting beer, and you kind of don't mind waiting for it, drink lagers, you know. If you want some of those more tropical, you know, maybe not so malt-driven flavors, you know, ales are fine.
And ales, you know, like you said, from grain to glass, 10 days. Lagers, you're looking at maybe a month.
Yeah.
The difference between the two is the temperature.
Correct.
Right? And then also how long it has to sit. Because as it sits, it creates a different flavor palette.
Right.
And this, the lager, you could actually, when I'm lifting it to my mouth to drink it, I could smell it. Like that
sure.
skunk.
Yep.
Smell that you were talking about before, but there is a different difference where the ale, you know, if you are going and cutting the grass, it's a refreshing, quick. It's, I don't say it's watered down, but it's very smooth, very quick to drink. Where this yeah. one, it takes more time, and you're not going to go and cut the grass and want something quick and refreshing
right.
to drink this because it's not going to meet that need whatsoever.
Right.
It is good. But there's differences.
It's right? funny, though, that even there you think in terms of, like, if I want something quick to drink that I just want a beer, I'll drink an ale. And if you're thinking you want to sit down with something and kind of, you know, have a few of them, you know, that's that lager in front of you. You're thinking, yeah, I want to take my time and right. kind of appreciate this. That's what I mean in the difference with, you know, personal preference. If you go to a bar, you know you're going to be sitting down, you're going to have a few of them, and you can instantly say, I want an ale.
Right.
You know, what do you got in the lager? What do you got, you know, what color is it? You know, you could very quickly get to something that you would like without having all the other flowery descriptions.
And to me, I don't know about you guys, but to me, sometimes it depends on, like, the weather, for example. If it's summer, I'd probably be drinking a lot more ales. But if it was more wintertime, you know, I'm thinking more probably lagers, depending on, you know, the preference. But I guess, so we've drank both of them, or most of them.
Yes.
So, intern, you're first. Ale or lager?
Ale.
Ale?
You like, so like, what do you think about it? Because the other one does, whatever hop that they're using in there is a little tropical, like it's got a nice...
Yeah, I really like the just the drinkability of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if I was just to grab a beer and have a few, I would grab the ale. Because I just simply enjoy it better. I don't really... it's not... The lager isn't bad, but I just don't...
You just find yourself leaning that way.
I just find myself leaning. I don't enjoy the skunkiness of this lager. As much. I'll still drink it.
I know. And it over, I do.
So what's next?
So next, so if that was an exercise I'm showing you between ale and yeast, right? So now, the next thing you can think of, if you sit down at a bar and you're looking at something, great, I know whether I like ale or lager or whatever, right? But country is actually a really good way to determine what you're going to be drinking, right?
Okay.
If you're drinking American beer, typically it's like clean, high horsepower, right? In terms of alcohol, because of the ingredients that we use, you know? Brash, arrogant, right, that's what you're looking for. Big, huge flavor. But typically not like subtle, refined, you know, like German is, malt driven. And then in Belgium, the yeasts that they use create a lot of like spice flavors. And I mean spice like Annie's or Five Star, you know what I'm saying? Like They almost savory, almost medicinal, mm-hmm. you know? And I hate to say cough syrup, but approaching that where it has like a, just a flavor you really can't get from grain or hops. So, and a lot of people, like if you sit down and you look and you see, sometimes those boards are, you know, it'll say it's from Germany, this from Belgium. You will know one way or the other, I don't like all that Belgian stuff, then keep that. You know, I want a nice clean German lager or a nice, you know, light German ale or something like that. So it's just another thing to throw into the equation. So the two that I have here, one is Franziskaner Hefeweizen. Okay, I was talking about the Hefeweizen. It's pretty good Hefeweizen. So this German Hefeweizen, the yeast is responsible for making the flavors of banana and clove in this one. You'll taste it as soon as you taste this beer, you're going to know what it is, right? This other one, this is the only American Trappist beer that exists.
This is your favorite,
this
right?
This is my favorite. I love Belgian beers. Goldens, triples, all that stuff, right? But I love it for that spice characteristic. So, a bunch of monks in, Trappist monks in Massachusetts.
Before you get into that, I want you to explain it to, we'll have the taste testing, but once we get done with the taste testing, I want you to tell a story about Trappist, because I think that whole story is very...
Cool story,
it's
right?
a cool story. It's very interesting, because I think... you especially have kind of woken me up, because there's so many very interesting stories, and hopefully throughout this podcast, you know, throughout the history of it, we're going to be able to kind of tell some of these stories for these breweries, because there's a lot of them that just have these amazing stories to where when you're drinking the beer, you know, you have a great tasting route, but at the same time, there's so much history
yeah.
going on in that and glass.
You just never know about
you just never know, but, so, anyways, go on, sorry.
No. So, what you'll taste Spencer here is really good, it's very, like a lot of times the Belgian beers tend to have so many flavors going on at once mm-hmm. that they're really not for somebody who's going to sit down for the first time. You're not just going to dig into Chimay or you know anything like that and think, oh wow, you know this is a light, clean, refreshing, because they're not. They have so much flavor in them. So Spencer's a really good one to start with because it's got a nice, lightweight, clean kind of flavor. But it still has a lot of that Belgian characteristic to it, you know. So this is a good one for you guys to try and think. Oh, this is what people mean when they're going in the direction of Belgian beers.
Okay.
So here's, let's do have a Weizen first.
So this this one you're pouring right now.
Yeah, I'm just gonna give you a little bit of it so you can get. This is the German Hefeweizen. It's an unfiltered wheat beer, and the yeast that they use for a beer like this is gonna be. Going to produce that, and the yeast itself is going to produce those banana and clove esters.
I was about to say that, like, I can smell the bananas.
Yeah, huge flavor now.
Now, do the having an unfiltered beer that's cloudy, does that change the SRM?
No, the SRM will stay the same, and again, it's weird to me that there's no scale for. Clarity of beer. There are words that people use to describe it. It'll go, you know, hazy. Cloudy, hazy. You get all the way up to brilliant is, I think, the top level. There's all these different words to describe it. But no, you know, it would be nice if they had a scale for that. I think it would be nice if they had a scale for the malt, you know, kind of flavor too. There is one that brewers use called BUGU, B-U-G-U, bitterness unit to gravity unit. So it means that gravity, like we were talking earlier, higher gravity, more grain used, obviously more malt flavor. Bitterness unit, more hop used, obviously. So if you're looking at, if you had a one, that would be that you would have a point of gravity for every so many bitterness units. If you had something that was like, I think it's how it works. If it goes like 1.5, our intern can look up BUGU ratio, B-U-G-U ratio.
BUGU, not FUBU?
Yeah, not FUBU. BUGU ratio. To where, and they don't use this a lot, I've only seen this in a few places. If something like that were to get more popular, that's an excellent way to look at it because you're looking, you're thinking, oh, there's the malt to bitterness ratio right there in front of me. I know exactly what's going to be in that beer in one number, but for some reason it just doesn't catch on, you know, so I don't know what that is.
So this is pretty refreshing, you know.
Definitely my go-to summer beer.
You think so?
Like, yeah, once I started drinking these and you kind of get over the oddity of drinking something that kind of tastes like a banana.
Right.
Yeah.
Once you get used to it, it's kind of hard to turn back.
Yeah, it is very, very good. So this is, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a German beer.
Mm-hmm.
So would this...
German ale.
German ale, mm-hmm. Okay. Would this taste palette be representation of a lot of German
yep.
beers?
This would be, so the Germans, they'll use very, very specific yeast strains for each individual beer. In fact, some of them are so specific that you can't get them out. Like if you want to, oh, I'll make a Kolsch. Bullshit. You're not getting a proprietary Kolsch yeast like they make in Germany. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
You get close. There are people who make like, they'll put strains together, you know, close, but it's not the same thing. So Germans, in fact, are... They know the exact flavors they're looking for, and they know the exact flavors they want to eliminate. So if you're drinking something that's like a Bock, that's malty, they're going to use a yeast that doesn't produce very many, if any, yeasts or yeast esters at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas in something like this, they're famous for, they brew fast, they blow people's equipment up, you know, because there's so much fermentation going on, but it does provide those mad, fruity, you know, yeast esters in there. So there, it would not really be a good indicator of saying, oh, this is a German yeast. It's just that Germans are very specific about the yeast they use for a very specific kind of beer. If that answers your question.
It does to some degree. So with that, it's just very, you are going to definitely, when you pick up a German beer, taste automatically what their aim is for, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's a better way of saying it. That if you know if you're drinking a Vienna lager, you're not drinking it to get esters. You're drinking it to get a very specific malt that they use. It's going to be a very mild flavor, and you're going to get a little hop profile out of that. No, but if you're drinking, you know, Franciscaner or another wheat beer, yeah, get ready for banana and clove. You know it's coming because that's what that yeast does.
Would you say more German ales are flavor driven then? Would they boil more?
They are. Typically, the European beers, the hops that they use provide a quality that is known as noble. So if we use hops that are tropical or piney or resinous, that noble quality that they use is predominant in a lot of their beers. They don't use a lot of different hops, really. Saaz, Tettnang, Hallertau, a couple others they use. But they just don't drive their beers that way. They drive them by yeast and technique is how they do it, you know?
So you've poured us another beer.
This is the Spencer. This is the American Trappist. So the first thing you'll notice is that for Trappist beer, pretty light, pretty clear, right? Not real malt driven. So they, the yeast strain that they use, again, hold on, so a sample is here. You can even smell it. As soon as you smell it, you'll smell that spice difference. That's that Belgian quality.
Now, remember when I texted you, I was in San Francisco and I went to that Trappist bar? Was this the same company?
It's the same concept.
But it's different.
Trappist, and again, you're the intern, damn it, you look that up, you'll tell us. But as far as I know, a Trappist monastery they're very, very specific. They, you know, the story here is that the monastery in Spencer, Massachusetts is a lot of old soldiers, guys that maybe don't find the place to fit into the world after they've kind of seen what they've seen abroad, you know, in combat or war. And they kind of enjoy the camaraderie of each other's, you know, and it's like a brotherhood. It's a monastery. They're monks, you know, they're there because they want to be, right? And everything that they do is to keep the monastery going. So I don't know that the monastery was going under. I just know that I guess their abbot was, if that's his, you know, title. Maybe I'm not getting the story 100% right, was like, well, listen, you know, we're not, the ancient way of doing this isn't working. And monks brew beer, let's brew beer. So they appealed to the Trappist monasteries particularly in Belgium, to say, hey, listen, can we do this? And they said, well, maybe not with our specific yeast strains, but maybe we'll get together and we'll put one together for you, and then you can use it. Or we'll teach you how to do it, and then you can use the local, you know, yeast strains. You can harvest all the local stuff yourself and make your own. And I don't know what they settled on in that regard, but what I do know is they said, yes, you can be a Trappist monastery. Yeah, you can make beer and call it Trappist beer, and it'll be the only one outside of, you know, Europe. In the world, it's the only one in America.
So this is American Trappist.
It's American Trappist beer.
So a lot of soldiers, right?
Yeah, I believe that's what I understand.
They decided to become monks because of...
It's the kind of, I don't know that that's how that monastery, I know that monastery has gone on for a very long time.
Right.
I just think that when I have seen their descriptions and, you know, seen them talk about it, that's the type of person that in this modern world is attracted to that lifestyle, that it's quiet and they're surrounded by other people who kind of understand them, and that maybe don't really want to fit into the society that they left. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
they came back different people.
Right.
And that's kind of the description that I had got from when I had looked at all this. But I tell you what, man, regardless of whatever their situation or motivations are, they make, this is fantastic beer.
It is. Very good.
But for our purposes, for the purposes of somebody who's going to walk into a bar and get something, if they taste something like this, I think they're going to get a really good concept of what Belgian beers kind of in general are like. You're going to know from now on, if I order a Belgian, I'm going to get some of that flavor. And if you like it, you'll stick with it, you know? Like we were talking about, you know, ales and lagers before, I'm probably more of a lager guy myself, and probably more of a German, because I like the super clean, malt-driven kind of flavors. But that's just, you know, individual taste. And I find that the exception to that is stuff like this. I love that spice that comes out of that.
You were saying, I was hoping you would say something about the spice, because it's definitely, whenever you drink it, you can taste that spice in it.
Yeah, and that's just those yeast esters, you know? So there's you do get overlap sometimes. Like a Hefeweizen is pretty close to a Belgian triple. You know, a triple uses a yeast that's high, it can handle higher gravity, but it also does sort of the banana and clove, has a little sweet, and they use candy sugar, these all kinds of interesting things to, but in the end, you know, it is the yeast kind of profiles that make these beers what they are.
What was the first one?
Frank Scott, Hefeweizen. Generally speaking, for the experiments that we did today, I tried to get stuff that you can get anywhere.
Right.
You can find Francis Connor all over the place. Spencer, on the other hand, you're going to find Spencer anywhere.
Right.
That's the one that when you guys go to... If you live in Ohio, get Spencer now, because you can get it there.
There is a very, very great...
That's as close as we can come to it in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, there's a very great... There's two, actually, in Ohio that I know of called Jungle Gyms. They're groceries that have... Groceries from around the world that are... It is amazing, and that has a very amazing beer selection as well. So if you live there, good for you.
Go there and get
some. Go there, get some drinks and get some food.
Yeah.
If you want to UPS it to me, that's fine too.
Yeah.
So which one? So intern. Which
one?
What
do you think? German or Belgian?
Oh shit! I like them both.
Yeah.
I myself make banana bread.
Oh.
So, I fucking love all this. Like, give me, like, yeah, like, so let me make some banana bread and we'll resume this.
Do you want to make some banana bread and then we'll drink some German ale?
Hell yeah.
Just be a German
banana
overdose.
It's got to have chocolate chips in the banana bread, but yeah.
Okay. It's your world, man. So you're.
Are you a changed man after drinking the Spencer? I mean, what do you think about that one?
So I actually last, about 2 years ago, I spent 2 months in Germany and Belgium. So I actually really didn't like Belgian beers up until just kind of trying them out and just tasting them
experience.
A lot. Yeah, and appreciating them for what they were, because they were, I think they were just too complex. And when I was starting out, I think I was like a lot of craft beer aficionados, just like blow my palate out with an IPA.
Yeah.
And like, that's just kind of where I was. And then now I think I appreciate some of the subtleties of things like Belgians. But I think the Spencer is really good because it's really accessible.
Yeah.
Like, it's not too in your face about it. And I think that would be a good place to start for people just kind of getting into it. Because, like you said, like, if you start with the Chimay, like, that's, you're just going to be like, what is this?
Right.
It doesn't even.
Way too heavy.
Yeah.
For, yeah.
If you've been drinking Coors Light for your entire life and then somebody throws that at you, like, that's going to be.
Yeah. It's so overwhelming.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I would say, like, if you're in Bruges and you're drinking, like, a Belgian beer, I think that also kind of, like, changed my mind a little bit, like, in the context. But yeah, no, I think between the two, I would go with the Spencer.
Yeah, I think I'm going to just completely puss out on that one and say that if it's summertime, I want to drink the Francis Connor. And if it's, like, winter, I want to drink Spencer. That's you know, right? I mean, they're both excellent, but that is kind of how I'm built. I like the yeast esters. I like, you know, grain-driven. I like all that kind of stuff. So, not to say I don't like hops. I have a pretty good example of one that I think is an IPA done right, and I'm, like... I don't have a soapbox about IPAs. I love them. I make a ton of them myself. You know, that's the one that's in the mash tun right now. I'm going to be making is an APA, but I think there's a way to do them. Go ahead.
Can I stop you real quick?
Yeah.
You just said something that triggered something. So there's IPA and there's APA.
Sure.
Could you explain the difference? Because for me,
American Pale Ale
is
30 IBUs or less. It's like 20 to 30. It's 30 IBUs or less.
Okay.
If you're going above 30 IBUs, 30 to 45, you're into an IPA. If you're from 45 to 60, there's a lot of conjecture, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're from 45 to 60, I'm probably going to call that a double. And then if you're above that, or your alcohol content goes, you know, completely haywire, then you'll get into, like, Imperial IPA. Now, there's a lot of different labeling stuff that goes on where somebody says, it's a double IPA, it's an Imperial IPA. You could look it up, but for my purposes, when I'm brewing... Yeah, I know what I serve to people. If I serve something to somebody that's beyond 45 IBU, generally speaking, I don't really consider that an IPA anymore. I kind of think that, like, when I got into brewing, IPAs were not popular.
Right.
And when they started to get to grow in popularity, they were not these 90 IBU hot bombs that they are now. And they just, it's an IPA. No, it's not. That's like a double. It's an Imperial. It's huge, right? Those are huge, huge beers. And that's fine. They're totally cool. There's a few of those that I really do enjoy, you know. But I'm just a little too old school in that definition, but when I was starting to learn to brew beer and really getting into it, up to 30 IBU American Pale Ale, up to 30 to 45 IPA, 45 to 60 double, beyond 60 and with a higher alcohol content, Imperial.
So, if I can reiterate, APA, IPA, double, Imperial.
And Imperial,
so
right.
If you're looking at the bitterness, if you're looking at the putting your mouth and drink it, all of a sudden, ooh.
Yeah.
That kick.
Yep.
It goes from least to most, from APA, IPA,
double
and Imperial. So if you get an Imperial IPA, when you drink that thing, you're going to feel that.
Right.
You're gonna.
And I can see there's going to be brewers. If any brewers listen to this podcast, they are just going to be like punching their steering wheel, telling me I'm wrong. Because there is so much conjecture over what makes these.
Right.
But as long as I've been brewing, as long as I've been looking at it, those are the guidelines I've gone by. And the IPAs are now so popular that even the judging committees that judge homebrewers have super expanded the amount of categories that IPAs fit into and made these really much, much looser, you know, definitions, where everything is. But I think that's a good way to go. If you sit down in a bar, you're looking and you see the IBU on that, or you see that's an American Pale Ale, you will know that is nowhere near as bitter as an IPA. That's the bottom line. That's how you use that information for yourself.
Okay.
Are you interested in trying the IPA?
Yeah, let's see what we got.
So there's a reason why I chose this one too. And it's because it's what we call a session IPA. So session means under 5%. Alcohol, right? So you're talking about not real grain driven, going to focus on hops. So when I see something like that, I see that it's not like they didn't just pile up the grain and then cover it up with hops, or this is a careful selection that somebody made, right? So this is Golden Road Wolf Hop. Golden Road makes a ton of really, really good beer. But I think this one in particular is just a fantastic hop sketch. Oh.
Where's Golden
right now? I have the foggiest of ideas. I'm sure I can look on the side of the can.
Intern.
Or the intern can. Yeah. L.A., California. There you go.
I don't know.
Yeah, right. I tell you, the San Diego scene for IPAs is no joke. No, there you go. Yeah. Piney, resinous, not too bitter.
That's pretty good.
Got a good flavor on it, right?
Solid.
That's a session IPA. That's something that I could drink these all day. That's what an IPA is to me. It's not these huge, you know, like you said, eating a pine cone at 8% alcohol to where you can have two of them before you can't drive home, right?
It's like a brand that I kind of associate with pine cones, like Sierra Nevada.
Sure.
Not the biggest fan. It's just too overpowering.
I totally agree.
Drink like two of them and I'm done.
I don't want to turn this into like, you know, I'm on a soapbox or whatever, but there are, if we get into that next level of conversation, there are certain breweries that I, for some reason, they seem to have like a universal profile across their beers, and I feel like Sierra Nevada is one of them. Mm-hmm. Where, yes, there's plenty of difference. They make great beers. Torpedo is one of my like top 10 of all time. I absolutely love it. But in all their other beers, I taste Torpedo, right? Like, it's there's something in there that is the same across all those beers, and I don't like that. I like it when, you know, like the, we didn't drink that one. I have one in there from a brewery called Boulevard, and their beers are, I mean, vastly different. They take the time to build something from the ground up rather than, it seems like what Sierra Nevada would do is use the same kind of format.
Gotcha.
Just punch it one direction or the other with hops.
They found something that works.
And so they use it.
Kinda,
right, exactly.
They use it and they kind of...
And they make fantastic beer. You know, they really do.
Don't sue us, Sierra Nevada. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, right? I think Sam Adams does a very good job of making different beers. You know, they used to just do the Boston Lager, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
I mean, they have really just run the entire gauntlet. I mean, everything possible, experimental stuff, all this crazy stuff. I think Rebel is a really good IPA that you can get in a grocery store. I think that's good stuff. But Rebel is not just Boston, you know, lager
right. Turned
into a, using an ale yeast and then punched up with hops. It's a totally different beer, and I don't know that Sierra Nevada, I would say that about their beers. I just, me personally, you know, I think they're a little... clone.
I don't know, so I believe with
not
that.
An insult.
Sue Nevada.
Not an insult.
Looking at you.
Not an insult.
If you want to
just
send beer.
Love
Torpedo.
Please don't sue us. Yeah.
Thanks. So a session, again, under 5%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
ABV, right?
Yep.
And then it's more so, go into detail because you...
Session, like, under 5%, but then, and I don't know exactly what the IBU is on. I may have the intern look it up here, see if he can find the IBU on Golden Road Wolf Pup. But that's probably close to 50, 55, 60 somewhere IBU. I think that's probably fair. You know, what you're getting out of there, that's a true IPA.
Right.
You know, they didn't go too far.
What was the double again?
Like, you could look those up, but I'm telling you, you're going to get a lot of differing opinions.
Right. Yeah.
But I like to think up to 30 IBU, American, 20 to 30 American Pale.
Right.
30 to 45 IPA. Mm-hmm. 45 to 60 double IPA. And then beyond 60, and the increased alcohol content that goes with it, Imperial.
Okay.
I think that's a pretty good guide to go by. You know?
Right.
You do see, you know, the... if you go to a bar and you pick something out and it says double IPA, you know you're going to be killed anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bitterness is just going to knock your teeth out,
right?
But it's, if you're looking for that, go right ahead. Let's see here. Session ABV 4.5 IBU 50. Boom. So exactly where it should be. That's kind of what, you know. I should have had the intern read that off. He handed that to me. But, that would be where I would put it by mouthfeel. And I think if you know you like that certain range,
right.
Again,
walk
in, you look down, it's light, it's not high alcohol, it's got that IBU, bam, that's
right.
The beer for me, right?
Makes sense.
Okay, so after all this, hopefully, if you've been listening to this, next time you go sit down in a bar and you see a bunch of beer you don't understand, you'll have a couple of directions to go in. You can think about country it comes from, color it is, how strong the alcohol content is, and maybe the bitterness units. And you can direct yourself to something that you would like. Hopefully you'll be able to do that. And after listening to us kind of ramble for an hour. Kevin, you got any thoughts about this?
No, I think this is perfect. Again, you know, I think there's a lot of things we learned today. The country that comes from, well, it can tell you something. The ABV, the SRM, IBU.
Exactly. Ale or lager.
Yeah, ale or lager. I think there's a lot of things we covered. We're going to cover more in future episodes. This is just the first. We're trying to give a... groundwork to the future of this podcast. If you would like to know more about the podcast, if you have suggestions on what we like to cover, by all means, hit us up. It's From Grain to Glass. That's FromGrain, the number 2, glass, glass at gmail.com. I'm really, really impressed that I was able to say all that since I'm about 6 years in already. and I appreciate it. I also appreciate everybody joining us today. Of course, Rob, as always, Nick, the intern, Jay, who stopped by, the lovely Lisa, that's also helped us out a lot throughout this podcast. So I appreciate everybody. Anybody else want anything? Nick?
Cheers, everybody.
Yeah. Still like Coors Light.
Someday, guys, one day, there's 2 things we're going to have happen. Nick, the intern, will marry a beautiful woman, and he's going to put down the Coors Light and pick up a beer. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Cheers.